another exciting episode of the ECCDC podcast. I'm your host, Jeanette Wilson, and I'm here in conversation with Rusty Keeler, who is a longtime friend and supporter of the ECCDC, and the author of numerous books, including Natural Playscapes, Creating Outdoor Play Environments for the Soul. Rusty is also an international speaker, outdoor play space design consultant, trainer, podcaster, and outdoor play advocate, and is on a mission to rewild childhood and asks us to consider what is our yes. Welcome, Rusty. It's been a while since we last connected, and I'm really looking forward to having further conversations with you regarding risk and challenge in children's play.
Yeah. All right. I'm excited too. Glad to be here.
Oh, wonderful. So just wondering if we can kick off with, to start our conversations this afternoon, can you please share with us a little bit about yourself and your journey to embracing risk and challenge in children's play?
Sure. Well, like all of you, I was a child once, and I grew up in like the 70s and 80s. So for a lot of us in that generation, that meant freedom and roaming and ranging. And that certainly was my childhood, free range childhood. So I had that kind of background of exploring fields behind my house and getting on a bike and exploring the small town that I lived in and swimming in lakes and being in creeks and all sorts of stuff. So I kind of grew up with that idea of just kind of freedom and making your own decisions and, you know, climbing trees and making your own decision about how high to go and, you know, what's going to happen if you fall and all sorts of stuff. So I kind of just grew up with that being kind of the norm of childhood, and just kind of developing, you know, with friends, but also on my own, kind of developing that kind of sense of navigating the world by myself, being able to do that. So that was kind of my childhood background. And then as far as, you know, professionally, I come at play and all this stuff from design. Not necessarily the education world, but I was an industrial designer, a product designer, and my first job out of school was designing play equipment, typical, you know, platform play equipment that you see at schools and swing sets and that kind of stuff. And I loved it. I loved designing for play, but that's kind of where I learned about play and the beauty and benefits of play and how important that is for children's growing up. And so I love that. I did that for a number of years. I lived in the Netherlands for a year in Europe and loved that. And I was designing play equipment. And then my idea shifted because of what I saw over there. And it was much more, or I should say it was less, just strictly play equipment, parks, but whole parks and whole city centers that had interesting objects and art and places for children to play and explore and experiment with. And there was nature and there was messy stuff and boulders and sculpture and all sorts of stuff that kind of changed my idea about what children's environments could be, especially looking at it as a designer. I love design for play, but this kind of gave me different ideas about, like, well, what could an environment be like for children? So when I came back, I kind of started on my odyssey, my quest to design a better playground, designed, you know, natural playscapes that were less equipment based and more nature based. But that also, kind of looking at them now, had risky stuff or opportunities for children to take risks. And then at the same time, I also was getting interested in the European adventure playgrounds, where it's often lots of loose parts, loose boards, lumber, tools, hammers, nails, and kids build their own parts of the play area. And you can think of it as very risky, and yet children, of course, rise to the occasion and do amazing things and are okay. And so I realized that I love that kind of stuff too. So not only the nature play stuff, but then take it to the next level, which is kind of like raw, you know, loose materials and freedom. That kind of reminded me of my own childhood that I just had, you know, informally with all that stuff. But here it was like with adults kind of designating areas for that kind of play, and those opportunities. So I love that idea of, you know, a playground that wasn't like all perfect and, you know, metal and painted and, you know, plastic and all that kind of stuff. I like to kind of raw and messy and tree climby and loose partsy and really the opportunity for open-ended child-directed play. And if that gets risky, you know, it's one way to look at it is risky, but it's really ultimately what I'm all about and what I really want to support the most is just play. Like the free flow of play, wherever it goes. And that's what I saw in those adventure playgrounds. And that's what I see with children, you know, in nature and in the woods or at the beach or at the lake, you know, where they can just explore and experience. And so I want, you know, now in my career, I'm working with educators and parents and really kind of looking at that of the beauty and benefits, how important play is biologically for children and building brains and bodies and, you know, social connections, and how we want to say yes to all that, even if it makes us nervous sometimes. And that's kind of what I think about risky play. Like it might just be stuff that makes adults nervous. But so that's kind of what I'm all about, kind of where I've come into this, and ultimately just being a supporter and fan of play and how it goes, you know, the endless possibilities and imagination of children.
Wow. Yeah, lovely. So it sounds like we grew up during the same period. I'm also a child of the 70s and 80s also. And yeah, that rich history of, you know, that adventure play kind of perspective in myself coming from the UK and being a play worker, I can totally resonate with everything that you are saying, that importance of play, and embracing everything that comes with that, the risk as well. So thinking about that and the risk, what kind of risk taking do you feel is appropriate for children in early learning environments?
Yeah. You know, if I could just rattle off a list of activities, and that's anything, you know, if we think of risk taking could be physical risk. So that could be climbing things and falling or balancing on things. You know, what is the risk? It could be falling. So like climbing, balancing, running fast. But it's also, you know, there's social risks of, do you want to play with me? Do you not want to play with me? You're using that toy, that plastic dinosaur. I'd like to use that plastic dinosaur. How do I, as a, you know, early childhood kid, take a risk of saying that or you know, learning to, you know, use skills? And so and that goes also with like kind of, so there's, you know, that's physical, there's social, and then you think things like rough and tumble play or play fighting, which is important, but it also pushes our buttons often as caregivers and adults, because you know, we don't want violence, or we don't want, you know, children fighting or getting hurt or feelings hurt. And yet something like play fighting and rough and tumble is very important, because it's less about the physical risk and more the social risk of, you know, when is enough, or what are the actual rules that you've talked about before engaging, or what's unspoken of, and is your friend gonna, you know, respect the boundaries that you've set up. So anyway, there's just lots of risks that can be found on early childhood setting. But ultimately, what, you know, I'm less interested in like the actual activity of a certain risky activity or risky play per se. And I'm more interested in just the idea of the freedom for play to flow wherever it goes, wherever it needs to go. And that could lead up to a top of a hill. It could lead to the top of the hill and then riding a tricycle down that hill, or it could be building up, you know, playing with sticks or really, really big sticks, or, and less about like, oh, we're doing a risky play activity, and more like, well, this is how the play is going. And but it might be through the lens of the adult where it looks risky or makes us nervous. And so that's kind of where my work with educators lands, of like, yeah, looking at play and talking about it and seeing what makes us nervous to support it or not support it.
Yeah, often such an important point when we think about risk. Often that physical risk is what springs to mind, whereas those that emotional, that social risk, and yeah, as you spoke to, you know, yeah, that risk of asking somebody if you can join the play, that, you know, if that's rejected, if they say no. So all of those things that go along with that. And I love what you said about the freedom and the flow. I often like to speak to the five F's and add fun to that one as well.
So what are the other two? Wait, freedom, fun.
Oh,
what are the F's?
Freedom, flow, and fun.
Yes.
So
yes.
just yeah. Following on from that, what are some of the common misconceptions that you come across around risk taking during children's play? And I'm curious, how do you counter them?
Yeah, it's interesting because I work with lots of different groups that have the full range of feelings towards risky play, where I work with play workers and adventure playground people that are like, yeah, we want full on kids building stuff and using tools and cooking over fires and all that kind of stuff. And then there's, you know, licensed and accredited childcare that are still all for all that kind of stuff. And then there's other programs that are nervous about that stuff. And then there's other programs where that is the last thing that they would want. They think they want to do, because they think that the most important thing that they're doing is keeping everybody safe. And so just the idea of letting children do riskier things is very foreign. So it's kind of fun just talking to all that huge range. So misconceptions might be that risky things in the play area are bad. And we want to get rid of all that stuff. And that kind of goes with the idea of like, in the old days, we used to do risk analysis. You know, you could do that in your playground, like risk analysis, like, oh, there's a log. Risk analysis says you could fall, you could poke your eye out, you could break your arm, you could chip a tooth. And then we don't want any of those things to happen to our children. So we say no. And then we feel good. Ah, I prevented all that stuff. But if we look at it and do risk benefit analysis, that's what people are doing now. It's like still looking at the risks and what could happen. You could fall off that log, but then also what are the benefits? And that's when it gets into the idea of like, we don't want to take away all balancing on logs and all this kind of risk, because there's all these very, very important developmental activities that are happening when children engage in this kind of play. And that's the stuff we all want. And no matter where you are in the spectrum, you want children to develop healthily, you know, develop healthy and strong and be resilient and be good problem solvers and be able to use their voice and be able to, you know, build their bodies. And, you know, everybody wants that, but we kind of have different ideas about how to get there. So part of this crusade, if you will, of like promoting riskier play is just the idea of promoting play and where it goes, because that is the natural way that we develop as humans. And we want to be saying yes. We want to not be saying no to things. And so, but it's a big complex situation and subject of risky play, because there's so many things that are attached to it. And that's also why it's fascinating and interesting. Because it is complex of why we say yes and why we say no, and what are the pressures, and what do we think as an adult, what do we think we're supposed to say no, or we think things are rules, or we think this is what, you know, the parents are going to say, or we think this is what licensing and regulators are going to say, and we don't want to get written up, or we don't want to get sued, or we don't want to get shut down. And you know, so that stuff's all on there. That's like the adult mind has all this extra stuff with supporting a kid balancing on a log. Somebody gets hurt, what's going to happen? But all that stuff doesn't really even have anything to do with the actual child in their flow of play and them, you know, carrying a stick because it's a magic wand that's going to be used to, you know, to stir a potion. So it's a funny thing that it's more like psychology of the adults, I guess. It's kind of a complex answer to the misconceptions, but the misconceptions might just be like our job is strictly to say no to anything that could happen, and we're just going to say no, and at the end of the day we turn the children to their parents and they're safe and then they go. You know, so that's one way to look at it, but I feel like that does a it's a disservice to actually what the point of childhood is and early childhood in kind of the natural progression of life and learning and growing and trying things and making mistakes, but learning from it and being collectively together with other children and then loving, caring adults. And so I'm always trying to like promote that kind of like take deep breaths and what's the, you know, what's the point of, you know, why do you do what you do? Why are you supporting young children's lives? And what are your goals, or what are your intentions, or what do you stand for? Even and then this stuff can make us nervous. So, and yet I feel like the most important thing to do is kind of tap, like, well, yeah, what are your beliefs in that? And you know, if your belief is we want children to, yeah, have freedom to grow and explore and experience life, and you'll be there to supervise and protect around the edges, but things might make you nervous. That's the opportunity. Like, if things start to get a little, make you feel a little nervous, that's the opportunity, I think, then to look at your own psychology and think, okay, am I about to say stop or no or get off that because it's really dangerous? If so, that's good, right? Supporting risky play doesn't mean let anything go. But we want to make sure our decisions are based on like really in the real world versus just our what's it playing over and over in our head or our own fears of what could happen. We're good at seeing the bad things that could happen, falling off a log, but then we're also like we see all the other things about licensors and regulators or parents or, you know, we have all these other kind of voices in our head and our own feelings too. So it's kind of sorting that out, I think, the adult journey in risky play.
Yeah, so important. So yeah, thinking about how what educators' comfort level is and how we can support educators to maybe step out of their comfort zone a little and thinking about all of that learning that does take place when children are taking risks. And I always think when I'm thinking about risk benefit analysis is, you know, what is the risk to the child if they never have that experience, that maybe most risky, dangerous time is before the children have not had that experience because they don't know how to kind of deal with it, how to handle that. So
And to me, that's like That's scary. Like if what is that risk? Like if we're always saying no, if children are growing up with no, and then they get to the next level, no, and children aren't outside playing the way we 70s kids remember, and if it's adult driven, either parents or teachers, and those are the concerns of like, well, yeah, what are those risks? And then they're not out on their own exploring and experiencing things until when? And then what do they do? How do they experience that kind of freedom suddenly as a teenager, or suddenly as after they graduate high school? Then suddenly they're on their own and they have to make decisions and take risks or not take risks, or how do they even know how to take risks, or how do they know that they have it in them to take risks in life? Because life is all about problem solving and taking risks and trying things. And yeah, I think about, I live in Ithaca, New York, and there's, a bunch of colleges here, and I talk to different professors and things and teachers that work with college students, and they say a lot of kids have trouble making decisions or dealing with adversity because they never really had those experiences growing up. The way we might remember falling out of trees or, climbing in creeks and stuff. And so they get a bad grade, they fall apart, they're distraught, or parents are still involved in helping them out, because they've always helped out because we parents love our children and want to help. So yeah, I feel like when ultimately with childhood, we want children to get to be adults that are as confident as possible as they can be, and able to problem solve and make decisions and pick themselves up. But how do they get to be that if they haven't had those opportunities? And if we trickle back down to being a kid or being in early childhood education, like that's what it looks like. It looks like balancing on a log. It looks like, trying to climb something and maybe falling and getting back up with the support of a loving adult. And so I feel like that's the kind of the foundational stuff. Yeah, that it might not look like it relates to failing a calculus exam in college and how you pick yourself up from that, but it does. It's like a direct line, because children, you build that just like they're building their brains and their muscles. They're also building their resilience and their experiences and their confidence in themselves in the world.
Definitely, definitely. And I know Peter Gray speaks to the correlation between the decline in unstructured outdoor play and the increase in mental health issues around anxiety, depression, etc., and that direct correlation over a 50-year period. So interesting, important, all those skills that children are developing. So I'm curious if you feel that there are any cultural and society factors that influence attitudes towards risk-taking during children's play.
Well, I know in like public playgrounds, there's like, you bring your kid to the playground, and people are kind of looking at each other. The parents are looking at each other, or like, who's that kid up there? Who's the parent of that kid that's climbing up the slide, or doing things that are unorthodox, or and there might be like this peer pressure, or sometimes I call it fear pressure, of like, you're supposed to be scared, or you're supposed to not let your kids do stuff. And or isn't it? Isn't that what we're supposed to do? And the same with like teachers of, like educators might feel like, well, I'm supposed to say no to climbing up the slide, right? Or isn't that what we're doing? Or so there's some like collectiveness about that. Like, I'm supposed to, am I crazy for letting them balance on that log? And then, at the same time, there could be cultural things of, like sometimes, like a real adventure playground's pretty messy, right? It's pretty, my favorite places are those messy, my aesthetics have shifted from like the secret garden to like the secret junkyard where it's crazy. But that for a licensor or regulator, like if they come in and see a junkyard, they might, if they don't immediately write you up, they're going to be very suspicious of like what's going on here. And culturally, I don't know what licensors, they might look at people of different cultures or different backgrounds or different colors, and they might come in with biases already. And then if there's a messy playground, which could actually be like best practice, but it looks really messy, maybe biases would come up and they would, write them up quicker or, do, be worse, harder on them. So in that sense, the supporting risky play, the adult has to have resilience and self-confidence and strength, that inner strength that we want children to learn, because they need to be able to explain it. So it might, you could say to a licensor, it might look like a junkyard, but here's what children are doing. They are creatively using materials. They are collaborating. They are using their language. This is pre-literacy. There's math skills. There's, you need to be able to back it up, I guess. So, other times I've culturally, I've seen people do perfect painted playgrounds and rubber surfacing because they think that that's, that's making it.
Right, thinking about play value, the aesthetics versus, that deep, genuine play. And I've not heard that phrase before, that fear pressure, rather, yeah, that kind of resonated me with that a little bit there. So there's plenty of research and awareness raising around the importance of risk-taking in children's play. We've come a long way in the past decade, to embrace risk-taking. And do you feel, for some people, maybe that's more recent than others? And how can we further reconceptualize and promote the acceptance of risk-taking in early learning environments? I know you spoke to that a little earlier. Just wondering if there's anything, further that you feel.
Well, it's interesting. From I would say we have come. I agree. We've come a long way in, say, 10 years. And so the idea of this supporting play and saying yes more to it, or just checking ourselves when we're about to say no, I think people are doing an amazing job with that. And when I work with groups, more often than not, people are like, yeah, we're doing stuff. We're letting them go up the slide, or we have stick play, or we do rough and tumble. So I feel like people, it's not necessarily a new, people are discovering it anew all the time, but it doesn't feel like a new idea anymore. But what feels kind of like the next step to me is the idea of educators who get it and support it and believe in it. But how do they talk to parents about it? How do they relate, the benefits to parents who might come in and see a muddy kid or a kid in a tree and be like, because of, maybe the parents are really not like that. They might be very nervous at home, or they don't let their kid do that, but suddenly they're doing it, and how do you explain that? So I feel like that's a big thing that people are interested in. Now, in kind of this process, in the journey of risky play, is like, okay, how do I communicate that? And so, I think the starting point is to realize that you and the parents have the same goal for their children, and that's healthy, happy, learning, growing, exploring, experiencing. And yes, safe. I think with safety, I think it goes without saying that, early childhood educators are going to be supervising and keeping children safe. So it seems, you know, less important to even talk about that. But you can lay that down as a foundation, and then say, and we're also, you know, we're letting children balance on this log because, and then you can add all the things you'd said in the risk benefit analysis, if you've done it, of like children, yes, they might fall, but they are learning balance and they are having fun and they are problem solving how to get across that. And they are storytelling as they go. And they are, you know, and then the next level of like, and then that builds confidence and resilience and grit. And then they're learning to do things they've never done before. Or, so I think it's just like rattling off all the benefits to parents. And you could be proactive in your doing that, where you have printed materials and you have that in your parent handbook right away. And so that maybe you have a statement about, you know, riskier play or challenging play, that, you know, we're a place that says yes, we're a center that doesn't, you know, works to not say no and why. And then you list the reasons. And I will bet all the reasons are things that the parents would go for, that would they want too. And I've heard lots of stories about parents, nervous parents coming in and seeing like their daughter up in a tree and being like, oh my gosh, I don't let her do that, but look how capable she is, or look how good she is. And, you know, the educator could be talking to them like, yeah, she's been working at that all day, and she's just picking different routes to get up, and, you know, she's talking to the birds up there, and now she's made up a whole song, or, you know, really just to kind of talk them through it. And then I've heard stories about then parents coming in like after the weekend and saying, oh, well, now we're letting her climb in our backyard tree, which I never felt comfortable with, but she's doing it. So it's like an opportunity to educate the parents, or helping the parents, you know, move along too. And the point isn't like, oh, to do risky things. I think the point is mostly just to let children do their thing and where the play goes. And they know what, you know, what they want and what they're learning. And yeah, and we can say that, you know, doing risk and risk taking and having children assess risk themselves is like the ultimate skill that they're learning with this kind of stuff. And for them to tap their own inner guidance or build a relationship with their own inner guidance, the voice inside that we all have that says, yes, oh yes, I want to do that. Or no, I don't know if I feel comfortable. You know, and so that's the idea of like, if we adults are always jumping in and saying, no, don't do that, don't climb that, get off that, you'll poke your eye out. Okay, we're protecting them, but we are also keeping them from making their own decisions, which ultimately, that's what we want for the children, you know, as they grow, to be able to tap that inner guidance that's going to be with them for the rest of their lives, helping them make decisions, yes or no.
Yeah, that knot that you get in your stomach when you're not quite sure, yeah, of those kind of butterflies type of thing there. Yeah, so thinking about, I love that piece around, we're supporting children by taking risks so that they can, what's the word I'm looking for? So that they can assess risks for themselves around whether they do that or not. Also kind of when you spoke to, you know, educators feeling confident to communicate that with others, so whether it's families, licensing or whatever. And I know I think Mark Armitage has a phrase, I think that's widely used now, that, you know, that ran that as safe as necessary, opposed to as safe as possible. That kind of came to my head as you were speaking. So I know you've spoken to this quite a lot. You've given examples of specific risky play experiences that educators can incorporate in their early learning environments, as you've been sharing with us. Are there any other examples that educators could maybe incorporate within their practice?
Yes, absolutely. With all this stuff, I love the idea of the motto, dream big, start small, and never stop. And so that can be when you're making changes to your outdoor space, you're just designing a natural playground, but it also is when you want to try a little more risk-taking in your outdoor space. So you can dream big, like, oh yeah, we love those adventure playgrounds of Europe where kids are hammering and nailing and sawing and everything. But you don't have to, you don't start with that. You start manageable, you know, starting very, very simple. What's the easiest stuff? And sometimes that easiest stuff is really us. Like, just notice, like, I think observing the play with a new lens of like, okay, watch the play, watch what they're doing. And then also, this is kind of meta, watch yourself watching and notice when you start to feel uncomfortable and or when you're about to say no, or when things that you're fine with, and just notice that. So before you make any changes, it might just be pausing instead of stepping in right away, unless you really, really need to stop something crazy. But before you step in and say no, think to yourself, oh, why am I saying no? Am I about to say no? Why? And is it legit? Is it based on just you feeling nervous? Is it based on you feeling like that's what the other adults would expect of you? Or is it based on your childhood experiences? You know, this could, I do like reflections and journal writing with people of like, we actually look at that and think about that. And then maybe it's saying yes to something you've never said yes to before. Or it's letting the play go a little further than you've let it go before. So it's the first step could be just trying not to say no to something that makes you nervous if you really analyze it. Another small step could be just like the classic cardboard box. Just put a couple big old cardboard boxes out there. That's normal. That's natural. That's not too, you know, it doesn't make us too nervous. But then let the play just go wild. Like, just and stand back and just watch what happens and let it go maybe even a little further than you normally would. And then you can start to do things with loose parts, or you could just, you know, you could let children go up the slide. Oh my goodness. I'm sure your listeners already do that, but maybe not. And so, and then it's also discussions. I think that's another important place to start, is just start to have discussions with your staff and fellow teachers about like, well, okay, what are the rules? Are they really not allowed to go up the slide? Oh, is that a rule? Is that not a rule? Does it have to be a rule? Or what people feel comfortable with, or what your goals are, or what your culture of play is. What do you believe in? What do you stand for as a group, as a program? And does balancing on a log fit in with that? Does running with a stick fit in with that? All those kind of things. And then you just, you know, I think you just do those small things if you want to just kind of, you know, it's all about moving the needle. No matter where you are, you could probably say yes a little more, or try to feel more comfortable. And re-looking at the lens, kind of refocusing and thinking, oh, maybe my job isn't like to just keep everybody safe and that's the most important thing. Even if I'm saying no to everything, maybe, you know, we refocus and it really is about the holistic development of children and the natural flow and trying to not break that flow as much as possible. So it's kind of like observing and then conversations with adults and then trying little things and seeing how it goes and then trying more.
Right. I love that. Dream big, start small, never stop, don't give up.
Yeah.
Great mantra
Yep.
there. So you have, as we've been talking through conversation this afternoon, you have been speaking to how educators can communicate with families around children's risk-taking and how they manage risk-taking within their programs. Are there any other further strategies that you could suggest to educators?
Yes. You know who's really good at coming up with talking points about the benefits and how to talk to parents? Who's good at that is AI. Experiment with this sometime. Go to AI, ChatGPT, whatnot, and say, I am an early childhood educator who supports, risky play for children, and supervise safe settings. And I would like some talking points to talk to parents. And boom, 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 in 4 seconds, you would have all this whole list. And then it would say, would you like me to, it would ask you the next thing. Would you like me to put this in a nice design sheet that you could hand to parents? Would you like me to have a questionnaire for parents about their own levels of risk? Would you like me to go in more? Basically, on and on. But that's a nice starting point to say, oh, because, as an educator, you might have gotten, you probably got into the business because you like children and want to support children in their play and development. You probably didn't get into the business because you want to, go through the weeds with parents and try to talk about why you're doing what you're doing is important or how to, or licensing and all that kind of stuff. And yet, that's a very important part of the job is, I often say, like, we adults have to do the boring stuff so that children can do the great stuff. And part of the boring stuff might be, okay, I got to think about what I'm going to say to the parents about this. I want to put it in like a fact sheet or a document. And so that's where the artificial intelligence comes in handy. If just to give you a starting point of like, give me 10 benefits of risky play that I could t say to parents and also how I'm supervising. And then, yeah, that just kind of helps us, again, like that's not maybe the, you want to be thinking about 4 and 5 year olds and how to create resources for them. But that's a nice, kind of way to start with just getting some of the language to talk to parents.
I didn't realize that AI will design a tip sheet for you, do a questionnaire. So I've learned something
Yes.
this afternoon. So just following on from that, we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we didn't consider safety. So I'm curious about your thoughts on how educators can strike that balance between providing opportunities for risk-taking and ensuring children's safety.
Think one nice way to look about at it, go about it, is this difference between risk and hazard. So you can think about your own yard for children, and we want children to be able to take healthy risks, but we don't want them to get hurt on stuff. So we can think about a risk is good and a hazard is bad. And a risk is like something that's a little dangerous and a child might get hurt, but it's something that the child can choose for themselves to do. So that could be like the balancing on the log. But a hazard is something that's a little dangerous where a child could get hurt, but it's something that they don't see that could surprise them and hurt them. So they might choose to balance on the log, but they don't see that right next to that log, there is a big, I don't know, sharp rock or a chunk of a rebar from old playground equipment sticking up. And if they fell or if they jumped, they could land on that and it could hurt them. So it's good to kind of think about like, okay, we want to clear away hazards. Get rid of, and that kind of goes along with your normal playground safety check in the morning or at the end of the day. Your sweep to make sure everything, is looking okay. And so that both keeps children safer, making sure there's nothing ragged or jagged in your area, But it can also help you feel more comfortable too, knowing that you've done your due diligence to, make your yard as safe as necessary, not safe as possible. So that's one way to look at it. Yeah, so that's I guess that's the idea of like you're preparing the environment to be both bold and challenging and interesting and in my case I like a little wild and wacky, but then also you're just making sure it's not there's nothing that's really going to get them. Yeah, and then the balance of safety also trusting yourself, knowing that that you can jump in, when you need to. If you want to start saying yes more or not saying no as much, but also trusting yourself to, as you take deep breaths and start to, think about the play that you're witnessing, knowing that as you delve more into this, you can kind of sift through what's just your a fear that pops up versus deep breath, okay, they're okay, versus something that you really need to address. So I think it's that idea too, trusting that you will be okay to jump in.
Love that piece. We often speak to trusting the children, but trusting ourself to say yes. So we're coming to the end of our time together. Before we sign off, before we finish, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
My closing thought, I think just for people, just keep doing what you're doing. Pause, observe, and be amazed. Like a play worker, like think about like, well, okay, what can I add to this environment or to this play scene almost secretly? How can I like add more materials to keep the play going? And so instead of thinking like, oh, what do I How do, uh-oh, do I need to stop this? It's like, oh no, I actually think, oh, how can I make it even better by not jumping in and doing too much, but just subtly, like, how do I just be a sneaky play worker and, prolong the play and love it and know that that is the best thing, in my opinion, what you can do for young children is to support that play and, cheer it on, either really cheer it on or just, in your own heart, and to be there, to support the children. I think even less about the physical play, but more about the social stuff of like, oh, if you're really letting play go, well, sometimes things happen and there's disagreements or there's hurt feelings. And that's when I feel like, that's the real job opportunity for the early childhood educators to come in and be the loving presence, to be able to be with a hurt feeling or a mad feeling, or to bring all parties involved together and, model communicating and conversations and, give children the skills so that they can, communicate their own feelings or tap their own feelings and be able to communicate. So some of it is the physical stuff, but I think it's mostly that loving presence. And
That's a wonderful place to finish on, encouraging educators to love the play and be a loving presence. So, thank you for sharing your time with us this afternoon, Rusty, with some great conversation. So, keep up advocating and preaching about outdoor play and encouraging all of us to consider our yes and all the risk-taking opportunities that come with So that wraps up our conversations on risk-taking in children's play. Thank you for joining us and Rusty for sharing his insights with us. It was wonderful to reconnect with Rusty, to sit down with him to explore his thoughts on children's play and risk-taking outdoors. Rusty reminds us that this kind of play can be messy, but emphasizes the many, many benefits that children are afforded when they have opportunities to play outdoors and and experience all the risk-taking that comes with outdoor play. If you'd like to find out more about Rusty's work, please click on the links in the show notes. And if you liked this episode, please leave a comment. And if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the ECCDC podcast. Until next time, dream big, start small, and never give up.